Hello, everyone. Hey, it's great to see you. I'm very, very glad that you're here and always feel honored to be with you. So glad I get to be a part of Westside with you. A few weeks after the 9/11 terrorist attack on the World Trade Center, our church collected a large gift for a family who lost a husband and a father. And our connection to that family is one reason it disappointed me and angered me when I learned that a congressman claimed that his mother died in the same attack when she had not. It was one of many false claims that the man made over a period of time, which were later exposed. He had not attended the school where he claimed to have been a student, and he had not worked where he said he had been employed. He had not lost employees in a mass shooting event. He was not Jewish. He meant that he was Jew-ish, he explained. A lot of words tumbled out of his mouth, and yet many of them were lies. Even when we are offended by such revelations, there is a part of us that is no longer surprised when we hear stories like this. If there is one thing that we have all learned, it is that human beings are capable of extreme levels of deception and dishonesty. With only a brief clue, most of us would be able to cite some infamous news stories that featured some kind of lying. In fact, let's do it a bit Jeopardy style. Let's try it. Here's your clue. Denials of a politically motivated burglary in the 1970s that brought down a sitting president. What scandal? Watergate. Suppressed information about O-rings that resulted in a spacecraft explosion and the loss of seven lives in the 1980s. Let's just start saying it that way. It's a thing now, the 1980s. I think those are people that lived in the 1980s. Okay, what is the tragedy? The Challenger explosion. A huge corporate accounting scandal which led to the loss of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars in retirement savings. It's the Enron scandal. Every month, it seems, we learn of another occasion in which someone misrepresents the truth to retain power, to garner attention, to deflect guilt, to make money, to attack an enemy, and sometimes for reasons that are difficult to fully discern. A car company programs its software to cheat on emissions tests. An entrepreneur misrepresents what her blood testing technology can actually do. Athletes and coaches cheat to win. Even churches conceal wrongs to protect reputations or to avoid scrutiny. Regardless of how much we might disagree about politics or economics or sports, all of us should agree that the truth matters and lies are destructive. We cannot build a healthy society or church or family or even a friendship on deceit. When truth becomes optional, when truth becomes relative, everything is weakened and everyone suffers in some way. But before we nod enthusiastically about the politicians and the corporations and the folks out there who have played fast and loose with the truth, let's do what God commands us to do and use the Bible not as a weapon against others, but as a mirror for ourselves. Jesus stressed the importance of truth for his followers from the very beginning. It was one of Jesus' recurring themes. In John 8:31, Jesus said, "You are truly my disciples, my followers, if you remain faithful to my teachings, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Jesus did not ask his followers to ascribe to a perspective or to a set of opinions. He called us to affirm and to follow the truth. And that means the truth can be known. That means the truth can be discerned. Pontius Pilate asked Jesus in frustration when Jesus was brought before him near the end of his life, "What is truth?" Pilate thought truth was impossible to determine in a world of competing ideas. Pilate's view on truth is very similar to the view of truth that many people have in our day. But Jesus had already answered Pilate's question before he asked it. In John 18:37, Jesus said, "Actually, I was born and came into the world to testify to the truth. All who love the truth recognize that what I say is true." On another occasion, Jesus referred to himself as the truth, the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus wanted every tortured philosopher to know that there really is a true north in this world. So we do know which way to sail, which way to set sail in our lives. Jesus claimed that he and his teachings are the purest form of truth. And that is a massive claim. But the guy who comes back from the dead is qualified to claim that he is the truth. Jesus also had a unique way, especially in his day, of telling the truth. Because in Jesus' time, trust in the words that other people were speaking was at an all-time low. Now, you probably think that we live in a time when we can least trust what other people say. It was actually even worse in Jesus' day. And that's because those who wanted their words to be believed had created a complicated, tiered level of swearing that their words were true. You hear people say, "I swear it's true." Well, the people of Jesus' day, they had an entire system of swearing that what they said was true. And it was based on a command in the Old Testament that allowed God's people to take an oath, to make a promise in God's name, which was obviously a serious thing to do. But over time, that instruction became distorted until it was unrecognizable. You see, if someone swore an oath in Jesus' day on his own head, it was considered a casual oath that might not be kept, because after all, the person is swearing by himself. I mean, that's just like saying, "I swear," without adding anything to it. If someone swore by the earth, it was not quite as sincere as swearing by heaven, because heaven is above earth. And if a person swore by Jerusalem, it was considered poor form to break the vow, but it wasn't the ultimate promise. It wasn't the ultimate form of swearing. If someone swore by God, I swear, I'm telling the truth, it was considered binding regardless of how much it might cost that person. And these levels of swearing allowed shrewd people to avoid keeping promises or keeping agreements that became inconvenient or costly to them. If they wanted to escape some kind of arrangement, they could do so based on the technicality of on what they sweared. "Oh, well, when I said I would do that, I didn't swear by God. I only swore by heaven. So it wasn't as serious a commitment on my part as you thought it was. You failed to understand what I meant. I'm so sorry, but I will not be able to do what you expect." And with that background, you can understand exactly what Jesus was saying about lies and loopholes in Matthew 5, verse 33 and following. Look at these words. "You have heard that our ancestors were told, 'You must not break your vows. You must carry out the vows you make to the Lord.' But I say, do not make any vows. Do not say, 'By heaven, I swear,' because heaven is God's throne. And do not say, 'By the earth,' because the earth is his footstool. And do not say, 'By Jerusalem,' for Jerusalem is the city of the great king." See what the point Jesus is making? It all belongs to God. "Do not even say, 'I swear by my own head,' for you can't turn one hair white or black on your own head." That was before L'Oreal, you have to understand. "Just say a simple, 'Yes, I will,' or 'No, I won't.' And anything beyond this is from the evil one." All of those machinations and gyrations and added phrases and attempts we make to convince people that we are sincere, Jesus said, "No, all of that is evil. Your words should speak for themselves, and you should be able to speak simply and truthfully and then keep your commitments." That last sentence is so important. Loopholes and lies are evil. They're not just impolite. They're evil. Some of you remember an older translation of the Bible that translated part of those verses, "Let your yes be yes and your no be no." We all know someone whose words must be carefully recalled and carefully parsed because he or she does not keep commitments and tries to leave verbal loopholes that they can exploit later. Wait, I didn't promise that that item would be included in the price I quoted. I told you I would try to include it. Well, I tried and I couldn't work it out. Technically, that may be true, but relationally and morally and spiritually, that is just a bogus way to approach our words. On the other hand, we all know someone who speaks plainly and who speaks consistently and backs it up, someone who does what he or she says, someone who underpromises but overdelivers, and it flows out of their character, and you know you can count on their words. But the question is not whom we know who fits those descriptions. The question is which kind of person others have found us to be. Are you the person whose words have to be parsed, have to be written down, have to be remembered exactly? Or are you the person whose words count? Are you a loophole seeker or are you a word keeper? What is your word really worth? Would your kids say that you consistently do what you say you are going to do for them and for others? Would your spouse say that you do or at least attempt 100% to do what you say you will do? Would your clients or your boss say that you are a follow-through person, you are not a fall-through person? My son is the one who introduced me to pickleball. It's all his fault. A while back, he joined a pickleball club where he played with his friends. And when a new facility opened nearby, the manager of the new club offered Evan and his friends some incentives to join the new club. And since their old club had become crowded and courts were sometimes difficult to book, some of them accepted the offer and they switched to the new club. And everything was great for a while. But when a new manager was installed at the new club and learned that the incentives that had been offered were never put in writing, he refused to honor the agreement. He said, "If you failed to get it in writing, you really messed up." Now that sounds a little like, "Oh, you must not have listened carefully when I took that oath, because I distinctively recall saying, I swear on my head," which is not the same as saying, "I swear by heaven." It's certainly not saying, "I swear by God himself, so I'm afraid you're out of luck." And yes, if you are wondering, they're back at the original club, and if the manager offered them a deal, I suspect they said, "Can we get that in writing?" There are so many forms of dishonesty that this really has to be a principle that we practice and not just a set of rules that we follow. Somehow it must come from within us. Lying is not always as obvious or dramatic as misrepresenting how your mother may have died when you're speaking at a campaign rally. It can show up in subtle ways and at moments when it seems like little is at stake. Have you ever caught yourself misrepresenting the truth, lying about something that didn't really matter? Wasn't that a signal to you that you've just become so accustomed to it that it's become your native language? Let's talk about some forms of lying that we sometimes pretend are something else. The first is what we call little white lies. I don't know where that phrase came from, but those lies darken the integrity of our words and they dampen the enthusiasm of people who must relate to us. We say, "Thank you for the gift. I loved it." But we should have stopped with "thank you for the gift" because we didn't love it. Or we say, "Sorry, I didn't see your text. When we did see the text, we just failed to respond for a while. And it would not have been the end of the world for us to say, I'm sorry, I didn't reply to your text sooner. But we add a little lie to justify the delay. And we really didn't even need to justify it. We claim we were stuck in traffic when we were actually just allowing ourselves to leave later than we should have left again. But it feels better to say traffic was awful. That feels better to say than I'm disorganized. I've grown comfortable with disrespecting the time of other people like you. It's just hard to come out with that. It's tough to admit. Another way we fail to tell the truth is with exaggerations. Now, sometimes we use exaggeration as a tool. Hyperbole is what it's called. And we know that other people know that we're exaggerating. And in that case, it may just be a good communication tool. But sometimes we make ourselves the hero of a story when we were not the hero. Or we add some extra spice to every adjective we use and every event we describe. The service at a restaurant is average, but we say, it was really bad. A movie was mediocre, but we say, it was terrible. Or we exaggerate in the other direction. Our children play a good game, but we tell them they were amazing. The preacher brings a solid sermon. We say, it was awesome. Okay, that one's really fine. Let's not get legalistic about this, right? We say, I have the worst supervisor in the world. Really? The worst in the entire world? That concert was the best ever. When it was okay at best, the vocalist in the band has lost his or her best stuff. Oh, that person is so unfriendly when that person may just be laid back. He's the greatest president we've ever had. He's the worst president in the history of our nation. When we overstate every evaluation, every reaction, positive or negative, it shows a lack of commitment to truthful words. Here's one that clever people often employ: omissions. Now, I am a firm believer that we do not have to say everything that is true in every set of circumstances. That is called tact. It is called discretion. But when you leave an essential part of a story out of the story to intentionally convey a false impression, that may not feel like a direct lie, but it is a form of lying. That's why we take an oath in the courtroom and we are prompted to vow that we will not just tell the truth, but tell the whole truth. The whole truth is important. Partial truth can be extremely deceptive. If you tell the story of someone losing his temper, but you omit the part where he apologized sincerely immediately afterward, you're being dishonest. By the way, if omissions are a form of lying, I should update you on how I did with complaining over the last 7 days and not omit that report. I challenged all of us to live a complaint-free week, and I suggested that we pay a fine for every complaint. And I did pretty well for the first half of the week, and I think doing well in the early days of the week made me complacent as the week went on. Earlier in the week, as Sharon and I were driving down Cokie Mill, I began to joke about people's driving. And I paused and I asked my wife, did I just complain? And Sharon said, no, that was not really a complaint. It was just an observation. You didn't lose it. You didn't carry on about it. And I really liked her point of view. She's a discerning, honest woman. And clearly she is on my side and would likely remain on my side as these judgments need to be made. A few days later, I came home and I noticed all the pretty pillows on our bed. And I've told you before that I have a thing about the decorative pillows on the bed. I like to make fun of the pillows on the bed. I'm entertained by the fact that the pillow that I use every night to sleep comes off the bed to make room for the other pillows. that I do not use while on the bed because those pillows look nice. And all this pillow moving is strange to me. Now, I realize that I am supposed to stay quiet about the pillows. I would tell any husband who came to me for advice on this topic, shut up about the pillows. Never mention the pillows again. Only an idiot would do that. I am supposed to tell my wife that the bed looks great, no exaggeration, with all the counterfeit pillows on it. However, I came home 2 days ago and I forgot about the complaining challenge. And I made a sarcastic joke about the pillows on the bed. And my wife, who had been firmly on my side with the question about bad drivers, switched teams. She walked over to me and put out her hand and told me to pay up. So I am making an extra donation to a charity. Now, if we hear, by the way, that there has been a surge in charitable giving in Springfield, Illinois this month, we'll all know where it started. We'll know why. So, by telling you this, I've dodged the sin of lying by omission for the moment. Not for the whole day, because the whole day hasn't played out yet, but just for this moment. You know, there are some people who specialize in another brand of dishonesty, excuses. Are you a gifted excuse maker? Are you a talented excuse maker? Would your excuses earn you an A+ in a creative writing course? I would have completed that task by now, but I didn't have time. However, if people could see how much time you spent scrolling on social media and streaming TV shows, they might question the claim that you did not have enough time to get it done. Some people skirt the truth with flattery. That is when we say what someone wants to hear to ingratiate ourselves with an ulterior motive in mind. It's when we overstate compliments because we're trying to endear ourselves to someone. We want them to think well of us. We want them to feel emotionally indebted to us. That's what flattery is. Proverbs 29:5 warns, to flatter friends is to lay a trap for their feet. Sounds pretty cynical when it comes to compliments, doesn't it? Makes you wonder if some of the compliments you get may not be totally sincere, doesn't it? Well, don't refuse to accept a sincere compliment, but do beware of the person who always overdoes it. And do not be a flatterer, even if you've learned that some people are susceptible to it, and especially don't be a flatterer if you've learned that it helps you get what you want. That will lead you into the realm of lying. Can you think of other kinds of lies? Outright fabrications, gaslighting, guilting someone, double talk, misleading statistics. There are many ways to shade or conceal or twist the truth. And God dislikes every type of lie because they all tarnish our character and they all dishonor Him. And that's what Solomon wrote in Proverbs 6, that God hates lying. So do we love God enough to avoid what God hates? And if that's not enough motivation for you, remember that the Bible warns that we will give an account for every careless word we speak. God believes that words count, and He will hold us accountable. By the way, not every lie is spoken to someone else. Some of us lie to ourselves on the regular. One form of dishonesty is self-deception. I'm fine, but we are not. We need help. I can quit anytime, but we can't quit on our own. This isn't hurting anyone, but it's hurting you, and you matter, and it is likely hurting other people by extension. Most of us claim that we hate being lied to, but some of us hear the biggest lies from ourselves. And God wants the truth to live in us, so let's speak the truth to ourselves. It's tempting to believe that lying is exclusive to criminals and con artists, but lies worm their way into the carpool lines at school and into the doctor's offices and into friend groups and workplace cubicles and social media posts and lunch meetings and coffee breaks. Lies can find their way into sermons and conversations in the church concourse. You see, most lies are not a form of malice. They are a form of selfishness or convenience. They appeal to us, and they're always nearby. They always make themselves available for our convenience. But when we access them, they chip away at our character, our integrity. They pull our relationships and our reputations, and they pull our culture downward. Every lie does at least three things when it is spoken. It distorts reality, it undermines trust, it dishonors God. So I want to challenge you to make two commitments to the truth today. And I hope you'll make a point of remembering these and applying these in every possible way over the coming days. First, make it an obsession to know, live, and speak the truth. Now, I use the word obsession because I'm convinced that many of us are just unconcerned about the truth. Many of us just assume that we already have a grasp on the truth, already know the truth, already live the truth, and so there is no obsession to pursue the truth. We've been simmering in lies all of our lives, so we aren't as comfortable with them, or we aren't as uncomfortable with the lies as we really ought to be. We can become very interested in the truth when the truth benefits us in some way, but we are much too casual about the truth most of the time. Most obsessions are not good for us, but an obsession with the truth will serve you well and serve me well, especially if we focus our search on God and His Word. It is no coincidence that the people I know who are well-versed in the truth and have a great grasp on the truth are people who are well-versed in the Scriptures and who know Jesus well. That is not a coincidence. A New York Times piece shared some startling statistics from a survey that the paper conducted on truthfulness. Through the survey, 91% of those who responded admitted that they sometimes speak something less than the truth. 36% confessed that they have lied about important things. 86% admitted that they have at least casually lied to friends. Makes you wonder which of your friends is telling the truth and which ones are lying, doesn't it? 75% of children admit that they have lied to their parents. People must have believed that it was a confidential survey because 69% of married people admitted that they have lied to their spouses. And given all the admissions of lying in this survey, I'm not sure we can trust it at all. Another study reported that 97 out of 100 people lie an average of 3 times a day or more. And that is a huge concern when you remember that the Bible predicts that all liars will be thrown into the lake of fire, right alongside the murderers, the idol worshipers. Those who practice witchcraft are the liars. And 97% of us are displaying warning signs. So I wonder how many employees will lie to their supervisors this week. I wonder how many employers will lie to their employees or to their customers in the coming few days. I wonder how many children will lie to their parents and have gotten comfortable lying to their parents. And I wonder how many parents will lie to their kids for what they think is a legitimate reason. I wonder how many customers lie about why a clothing item is being returned. I wonder how many taxpayers already know that they will be lying on their upcoming tax return. Proverbs 12:22 says, "The Lord detests lying lips, but He delights in those who tell the truth." You and I can bring joy to God's heart by speaking the truth with love and integrity. It is challenging to speak the truth at all times. If you accept this challenge, you will find that it is very difficult at times, but we must commit to being truthful. You may have obsessions that you need to curb, friend, but here is an obsession that you should fan into flame. Obsess over discovering and living and speaking the truth, and remember, Jesus is the truth. If you follow him, you will have a huge head start when it comes to knowing and walking in the truth. And here's the second commitment I challenge you to make. I will be more discerning about the voices I hear. Many of us struggle to hold on to the truth because we consume so many lies. Some of us prioritize voices that are determined to amplify lies to us. Some of us idolize musicians, actors, athletes, political voices who are not devoted to God's truth, and that is unwise. Jesus prayed, make them holy by your truth. Teach them your word, which is the truth. Friend, the Bible is an ocean of truth in a thirsty world. And you and I must obsess over it being planted in our hearts and minds. I love what God said to Peter on the mountain where Jesus was transfigured. Do you remember that moment and that scene? For just a moment on the mountain that day, the glory and the majesty that Jesus had when he was in heaven, which he surrendered when he came to earth as a human, for just a moment that glory and majesty returned, and it was awesome. The Bible says his face shone like the sun. His clothes were blazing white. And then Moses and Elijah appeared to endorse Jesus. And that's when Peter said, hey, let's build a memorial to all three of you, one for Moses, one for Elijah, and one for Jesus. And do you recall what God said to Peter in response to that idea? God said in Matthew 17:5, this is my dearly loved son who brings me great joy. Listen to him. Hey, Peter, even when Moses and Elijah are standing around, if Jesus is there, listen to him. Make a point of hearing his words. And friend, that's my challenge to you. Stop listening so much to other voices and begin obsessing and making room in your life to hear the voice of Jesus and to know the person of Jesus. And stop listening to your own bad ideas and start listening to Jesus. That is how we can know the truth. And that truth can set you free. Listen to Jesus, obsess over what he said, prioritize his voice, listen skeptically to every other voice, including your own. Let's pray.